Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on preventing deflation when we come back. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. And you shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small. But you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have, that your days may be lengthened in the land which the Eternal your God gives you. For all that do such things and all that do unrighteously are an abomination unto the Eternal your God." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But back in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. Now, in place of these just weights and balances, these two presidents have introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks to the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they've given us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coin. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today, we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our country? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons that we teach in our Mosaic Law School, and we conduct that school here at the law school twice a year. Now, it's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. That's our CD package. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call right now and order one. The number's 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Our Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Now, once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been reviewing the privateer, and last time, Buckler made this surprising statement. He said, "This is complete fiscal and monetary madness. What we are witnessing today, ladies and gentlemen, is complete and total fiscal and monetary madness. It's insane. This is what we did back in the 1930s, and we got a result from it. This is what we're doing in 2009, and we're going to get the same result that we got the last time. Nobody wants that result, but that's what's coming." Now, I wanted to review a little bit of what we had talked about in the last program, talking about a new world is dawning in a global relocalization. Localization. Economies are going to decentralize, and they're going to become more local. And we've been through this before. There isn't anything going on today that hasn't gone on in times in the past. History repeats itself over and over again. So in order for us to figure out, well, what's going to happen over the next 10 or 15 years, we go back 1,000 years, or in some cases a couple thousand years, and we take a look at other nations and city-states and empires, and, well, what happened to them when they did this? And then we can just take a look at what they did and the results. And then we can take a look at what we're doing, and we can just about predict the same results are going to occur again. That's just the way life is. It's been that way for the last 4,000 years, and it'll be that way for the next 4,000. Listen to this. From here on, as the old system of credit and fiat money tears itself apart, think forward to the new Renaissance, which can happen almost anywhere. Keep it clearly in mind that the early Renaissance was one of the most creative periods in history, in the sciences, in the arts, in painting, sculpture, and in architecture. And to this day, people in their many millions fly to northern Italy simply to see the wonders of that time and to sometimes wonder why we don't have the like in our time. The answer to that question is twofold. Modern nations today have become so big that they have come under the control of huge centralized bureaucracies. They did not have that problem in northern Italy during the early Renaissance because the reach of any small city government barely extended for 50 miles. So that meant that if one small local government went off the rails, people in their hundreds simply fled and left for a local government close by where political or economic circumstances were better. Seven small republics on the mudflats around the estuary of the Rhine River formed themselves into a form of confederacy which later became known as Holland. Inside less than 100 years, they made themselves into one of history's greatest mercantile powers. They, too, had a flowering of sciences and the arts, which millions of people came from all over the world to see. And they, too, went for a hard gold coinage. Then the Renaissance and its ideas traveled to England, which had its Elizabethan Renaissance. And to this day, the works of Shakespeare from the English-speaking mind. John Locke followed with the second treatise, as did Blackstone with Blackstone's commentaries, and Adam Smith with his work on Wealth of Nations. So let's take a look at some more on global relocalization. Now, the English-speaking world spread itself far and wide, and on the east coast of North America were Englishmen brought up on these ideas. Not having representations in the British Parliament in London, they saw themselves as being taxed without representation. So on July 4, 1776, Thomas Jefferson's immortal Declaration of Independence was endorsed by men who pledged their lives, their liberty, and their sacred honor. Liberty now had a new place to stand. These new small republics, too, had a hard money. Originally silver earned from the Spanish and also minted by themselves to the same weight and content. And later, the new United States joined the then global classical gold standard after the end of the Civil War, and the U.S. surged ahead to such an extent that its own output equaled all of Europe's by the year 1900. Now, in times past, when we have used gold and silver coin, it has produced a renaissance. It did it in Holland. It did it in northern England. It did it in northern Italy. It has done it in the United States, in Canada, Australia, every place in the world where gold and silver coin is used as the basis for men's barter and exchange. Wealth is the natural result of it. So in the Bible, it shouldn't be a surprise to us that we read that It's a violation of the law of God. It's a violation of thou shalt not steal to use unjust weights and balances. It is a violation of thou shalt not steal to use these fiat currencies like Federal Reserve notes and paper money. Just that simple. And when we do, we get poor. And when we go back to gold and silver, we get rich. When a lot of people do it, then a lot of people get rich. And when just a handful of people do it, then just a handful of people get rich. See how simple that is? Now, anytime you want to get off fiat paper currency and stocks and bonds and worthless paper money and go back to gold and silver coin, you'll find that wealth will be the natural result of it. Now, that's been my experience, that's been the historical experience, and that's what this fellow Buckler is reporting to you. Now, most people aren't going to do that. Most people are so entrenched now in the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto that they are not going to change. And I'm not here to convince you that you ought to change. I couldn't care less. But if you're of a mind to, you know, if you're sitting there and you're homeless and you're poor and you've lost your job or you're about to or you're concerned about it, always remember this. In times past, when we turned from fiat paper money to gold and silver, then great wealth has always been the result without any exception to that rule. And when we have turned from gold and silver coin to paper, poverty has always been the result. And there's never been an exception to that rule. And what our present administration and our present world and world governments are doing is turning from fiat paper currency to greater quantities of fiat paper currency. And we're going to get the same results that the fiat paper currency gave, and that is we're going to have more poverty. It brought us poverty, and it's going to give us even more poverty. It reminds me of the lady down in New Orleans after the Hurricane Katrina thing. And a reporter asked her, he said, well, what's going to happen to Mardi Gras? And this lady said, there will be Mardi Gras. It never crossed that woman's mind that Hurricane Katrina was the result of Mardi Gras. That the God of heaven has smashed New Orleans because of Mardi Gras. Never entered anybody's mind. Oh, okay. Go ahead and practice Mardi Gras and see how that benefits you. Just keep doing it over and over and over and over and over again and see if it pays off. I think that if you'd get off of Mardi Gras and Easter, Christmas, and New Year's, I think you'd have better success. But, you know, people are people. And sometimes we have to reinvent the wheel over and over and over and over again. If you're getting good results, you should stick with it. But when you're getting bad results, your common sense ought to tell you, hell, this didn't work in the past. Why do we want to do this again? So as a reporter, I'm here to tell you that in 1787, when we went to gold and silver coin at Article 1, Section 10, it produced great wealth and prosperity in the United States of America. When they tried it in Holland, it produced great wealth and prosperity in Holland. When they tried it in Italy, it produced great wealth and prosperity in Italy. In Australia, in Canada, every place that gold and silver has been used, it produces great wealth and prosperity. For the most people, most of the time. Oftentimes people say, well, then if that's true, then why do people shift from gold and silver to paper money? It's because they have the promise of even greater wealth. And so the bankers come to you and say, go with our paper money and you'll get even richer faster. And it's true. It does for a very short period of time and then collapses. It's, you know, the bankers aren't offering you a pig and a poke. They're offering you something. You know, if you're struggling to get by and I walk up to you and say, here, let me give you $10,000 worth of credit. That $10,000 worth of credit is going to increase your standard of living and make you just happy as you can be for a while. And then after you've spent the money, now it's time to come pay it back. Boy, that isn't going to be pleasant. because now that calls for a contraction of your standard of living. You got to expand your standard of living, and now you've got to contract it. Expanding your standard of living is always fun. Contracting it isn't. I think you'd be better off if you didn't take my $10,000 loan and you just slowly but surely kept adding to your productivity. You'll get there someday. It'll take a lot longer. But, you know, gratification is what we're all after. And so you wanted to go borrow money on your house, and you did. Back in the 90s and right after 9/11, they expanded the bubble. Hey, come into the bank, borrow more money, and build a swimming pool, buy a new car, take a trip, and just have a great time. And you did. And now you got the contraction. Now here comes the bad part. Now, going on here, the descent of the United States. Now, after the end of the First World War, which the United States entered back in April of 1917, the United States, together with Britain, emerged as the victors in the monetary design to establish the post-World War monetary era. In 1922, at a conference which took place in Genoa, Italy, all of the other participants had to accept a gold exchange standard. This new standard made the U.S. dollar and the British pound both as good as gold, because they could be exchanged for real gold should any other nation so desire. But this standard was a fraud, and it was known to be a fraud. In practice, what it meant was that the United States and Great Britain could place their own national debts into the hands of other nations and have that debt counted as if it was gold which had arrived. But in 1931, Britain went off the gold standard, and 2 years later, President Roosevelt made it illegal for Americans to own gold. Now the road was open to unlimited expropriation of the economic goods of private people in both nations, and the money was printed paper, which people had to accept because it was also legal tender. Now, at Bretton Woods in 1944, the West's post-war monetary order was established with the U.S. dollar at the center. And all other Western nations had their national currencies anchored to the U.S. dollar at fixed rates. U.S. dollars could still be exchanged for gold at the rate of $35 an ounce, but only by governments and by their central banks. The United States had made itself a printing press, which printed paper, and then used it like gold. But the temptation was far too great. And as the creator of the West's sole reserve currency, the United States could acquire all of the economic goods in the world by simply printing more U.S. paper dollars. So, the United States printed far too many, and the U.S. defaulted on its international gold obligations on August the 15th, 1971, after spending the greatest hoard of gold in history, some 21,000 tons between 1949 and 1971. The United States had about 7,000 to 8,000 tons of gold left over out of the 38,000 tons that it owed to other nations. So the solution was to repudiate gold. So we Americans, we took the gold and then we squandered it. We took all of our wealth and we squandered it. And that's because it's so easy to print those dollars and go out and spend them. So as a nation, we went out, and our government went out, and we just spent ourselves into bankruptcy, and we couldn't pay our bills, couldn't pay our payments. So in August of 1971, we just repudiated gold and went on a total fiat currency. And the average Joe Sixpack doesn't understand, and he doesn't know that, doesn't care, but now there's a result that comes from that. Those events that occurred some 35 years ago have now come home to roost. That's the bottom line. Now here's the final word by Ludwig von Mises. Ludwig von Mises on the Theory of Money and Credit, which was originally published in German in 1912. He said, "It is impossible to grasp the meaning of the idea of sound money if one does not realize that it was devised as an instrument for the protection of civil liberties against despotic inroads on the part of governments. Ideologically, it belongs in the same class with political constitutions and bills of rights. The demand for constitutional guarantees and for bills of rights was a reaction against arbitrary rule and the non-observance of old customs by kings. The postulate of sound money was first brought up as a response to the princely practice of debasing the coinage, and it was later carefully elaborated and perfected in the age which, through the experience of the American continental currency, the paper money of the French Revolution, and the British restriction period, had learned what a government can do to a nation's currency system. Americans and the world are now about to experience what happens when a government tries to hoist itself and the nation's economy back up by new massive borrowing and money printing." So we're going to find out. We're going to do it all over again. We're going to reinvent the same wheel, the same depression, the same 10 or 15 year long poverty period that we did from 1929 to 1941. We're going to do the same mistake over again. I'm sorry to report to you that that's what's coming down, but that's not because I'm making it happen that way. I'm just here as a reporter telling you that that's what the powers that be are going to do. And it's going to be a disaster of such epic proportions. It will ultimately lead to World War III, just like the collapse of the economy in the 1930s led to World War II. You can almost bet on it. It's always been that way in the past. There isn't any reason to believe that it's going to be different in the future. Now, taking a look at inside the United States, it's not just the Chinese government. But every investor can have absolute confidence in the soundness of investments in the United States. Now, that's a direct quotation from President Obama. Our president said that not just the Chinese government, but every investor can have absolute confidence in the soundness of investments in the United States. Now, they have just added $12.8 trillion to the circulating currency of the United States of America through borrowing, through loan guarantees. Boys and girls, this is on a scale of the Weimar Republic of the 1920s in Germany. You can bet on hyperinflation, the total destruction of the United States dollar. So let's analyze that for a minute. Let's suppose you got a house, and your house is worth $400,000, like my daughter's. And let's suppose that you've got a job, and you're working, and you're making $20 an hour, and then let's suppose, just for the sake of our discussion here, that you've got a 401k plan, and that you've got money in the bank and in investments that total $100,000 or $200,000. Boy, you're just sitting on top of the world, aren't you? All right. Now let's introduce hyperinflation and see, where is that going to lead us? Hyperinflation is where the money is inflating at the rate of 10% per month. That's the official definition of hyperinflation, 10% a month. We're not there yet. We're not at hyperinflation levels. But I'm here to report to you that we're on the way. And by printing $12.8 trillion or taking on $12.8 trillion worth of debt and obligations over there, is putting more money into circulation than there are goods and services out here to correspond with those. There should not be $1 more money in circulation than there are goods and services in circulation or on the shelf. And so governments know that they can print or that they can create more money than there are goods and services, and then they can be the first ones to go in and buy them. And then when you do that, you have shortages. And this is why communism, or in communist countries, you get to stand in line to share the shortage. That's what that's all about. Stand in line and share the shortage. Now, the Fed is out of control. On Wednesday, March 18th, the Fed stated that it would buy up to $300 billion in long-term treasuries, as well as $750 billion in mortgage-backed securities in order to stabilize the economy. The rest of the world presently holds U.S. financial paper assets amounting to $17 trillion. Then on March 18th and 19th, the U.S. dollar plunged 4.3% across the world's currency markets, while gold fell $27.70 on March 18th, only to soar by almost $70 the next day. The U.S. printing presses are now rolling. The next destination is Weimar. The presses are cooking. Now, it takes time. When the Germans started doing this about 1920, it took until November of 1923 to reach its apex, when it finally collapsed. But, hey, listen, now that we've started, you can just about plan on the next 36 months, you know, like 1920, 21, 22, 23, over the next 3 to 4 years. This is the term that President Obama is going to be in office. We should run through the whole hyperinflationary debacle during President Obama's first term in office. And I'm saying first term, he may be elected the second time. I don't know. We may not have any more elections. We may just have a dictatorship come take over. But the Weimar syndrome is started now. And get this, there's no turning back. No turning back. You don't just turn this thing on and then, oh, well, I guess we've changed our minds and so we'll turn it off. There's no historical precedent for that. And the printing presses have now been turned on. And so we're headed for the hyperinflationary result that the Germans got in 1923. So make up your mind to that one. Now, what are you going to do to avoid that? What are you going to do to prepare yourself and your family to live through this, because this is what's coming. Now, talking about confidence in what? The U.S. industrial capacity utilization dropped to 70 in February from 72 in January. That's 2 whole percentage points. Matching the December 1982 record low for the series, which dates back to 1967. And what the Fed fails to mention is that historically, when U.S. industrial utilization falls below 74, then three-quarters of industry face losses. The Fed said industrial production fell by nearly 1.5% in February, following a 2% drop in January. Boys and girls, have you thought about what that totals up to be? If you lose 1.9 and 1.4% in 2 months, let me just plug those in here, 1.4 and 1.9 is 3.3 divided by 2 is 1.65 times 12 is nearly 20% per annum, 20% a year. When Buckler says that we have gone mad in this country, he's not whistling Dixie. These numbers, boys and girls, outstrip numbers that we see coming out of the Great Depression of the 1930s. In fact, the numbers that are coming out of here, as Buckler says, are mind-numbing. Credit and where due. During the 2008, U.S. Treasury securities outstanding increased now by $1.2 trillion, or 24.3%. So they went up by $1.2 trillion, 25%. Combined U.S. federal and quasi-federal securities outstanding exploded an incredible $2 trillion in just 1 year. $2 trillion in 1 year. last sentence says the United States is totally out of any control. Totally out of control. Well, that's about right. Now, when you're watching the news with Brian Williams and the Wall Street bankers and Timothy Gaither, you know, it sounds like, hey, just sit back and relax, everybody. It reminds me of the Titanic. People were coming up on deck saying, well, what happened? And the purser said, go on back to sleep. Go on back to your staterooms. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. They didn't know that everything was fine. They're just trying to make people feel good. And that's what your president is doing. He's making you feel good. That's what Brian Williams and Katie Couric are doing. They're making you feel good. And if that's what you want, stick with the program. But the great ship America has hit the iceberg, and this thing is sinking. And you need to take action. What action are you going to take? I don't know. Decide for yourself. You're an adult, you know. You should be able to figure out what you want to do. People are calling me here and they're telling me that they're unemployed, that they're homeless, that they've lost their jobs, they've lost everything they've got. There's no work out there, period. They can't find any, they can't even find a taxi cab to drive. Not that if you had a taxi cab to drive that you got any fares that are going to use your services. I don't know who in hell would be taking a taxi cab. But nevertheless, that's the reports that I'm getting here. Now, boys and girls, time to take action. If you're sitting on the sidelines saying, well, everything's going to be fine, you know, just sit back and relax. President Obama's going to take care of it. That's what you want to believe, and you're going to believe whatever the hell you want to. But that's not where reality is located. Reality isn't there. Hey, I got to give you a mid-course reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements and recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors and publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org or call us at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the current Privateer newsletter. Now, the Privateer can be ordered. You ought to order a subscription to the privateer in your own self-interest. I don't get paid anything by the privateer for promoting their paper. And this is not an advertisement for the privateer. I don't take advertising, and we don't advertise for anybody. But the privateer and the International Forecaster are two newsletters. You subscribe, you pay money for these. And then the privateer is $180 a year Australian, which is about $150 a year American. And the International Forecaster is $160, I believe it is, U.S. And I'm recommending the privateer, especially for you people that are not literate in economic terms. I mean, if you're just a truck driver, a tradesman, you know, you're a housewife, you're a waitress, you know, working in the ordinary Joe Sixpacks and Sally Housewives of the world. This you can understand. This guy puts this in historical and economic terms in layman's language that you can grasp and understand. That's why this guy is a national treasure that you Australians have. We don't have that here. Bob Chapman's a great guy. But I'm telling you that when you read his paper over here, sometimes I'll be sitting at the table reading, and I have this bewildered, numbed, eyes glossed over look on my face, and my wife looks at me and says, "Are you all right?" That's because I'm reading the International Forecaster. And sometimes I don't understand what I'm reading. And I'm trying to cogitate and figure out what an ABC and a CDS and a CD, LV, and a ZYX is. And I'm trying to figure it out, and I don't know. Not to run Chapman down by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, he's a pro. He's a professional. And as a result of that, he writes for professionals, and he writes to professionals, and I'm not one of those. I'm a crummy amateur, a bottom feeder. But Buckler doesn't do that. And Buckler writes this for the express purpose of educating people. I think that's what his motive is. And God, does he do a good job. As old as I am and as dumb as I am, there isn't a single issue that I don't learn something from. And $150 a year is a steal. It is a pittance. If you want to understand what's happening and why and who's lying to you and when, the privateer is the paper for you. Remember, this is the number 625. It's the late March issue of 2009. I'm going to give you his name and number here one more time, probably the last time. So get her down. His phone number now is in Australia, and the number says 617-5471. 1960. And if you think that you're going to get bad reception, let me tell you, when I get a call from Australia, clear as a bell, and it's dirt cheap. I think it's 5 cents a minute, a guy told me. 617-5471-1960. That's their phone number down there. Now, if you've got a computer and you want to get online, their website is www.the-privateer.com. I'm sure you can get more information from the-privateer.com. You can send them an email at capt@the-privateer.com. They've got an address. It's William A.M. Buckler, Post Office Box 2004, Noosa Heads, Queensland, 4567, Australia. All right, that's the privateer. Now I'm going to hit you with a couple of three comments here from the International Forecaster. This is the Saturday, April 4th edition here. And talking about U.S. markets. Now Bob Chapman puts out probably the single most comprehensive newsletter in the business. He puts it out twice a week on Wednesday and Saturday. We get it online here. It just comes right over the computer. And each issue is about 20 pages. Now, the Privateer is 12 pages each and every issue. And Chapman now is, let's see if I got a page number here on the International Forecaster. Come on, George. Looking for the last page, page 26. And so Saturday, April 4th, 2009 issue had 26 pages, and he puts that out twice a week. Sometimes it'll have 40 pages, sometimes 23 or 4. But you can bet on 20 pages plus twice a week. Now, many people, their eyes just glaze over. I'll give them a sample copy, tell them to go back to their motel when they're going to school here, read this, and tomorrow we'll talk about it in class. And they come back and I say, did you read the forecaster last night? And people look at them, well, I read 3 pages. I read 6 pages. I don't think I have ever had anybody read the entire International Forecaster at one sitting. I do. I probably have 20 of these newsletters. They're not all 20 pages, by the way. Some of them are just 2 or 3 or 5 pages. But I probably have 20 a week that I read, that come across my desk. This is by far and away the biggest, most comprehensive newsletter. And I ask them why they don't or didn't read the whole thing. And it's too deep. It's too heavy. It is too real. And they just do not have the mental capacity to read the whole thing. So I want to tell you up front that this may not be for you. It may be that you can't handle this. It may be that what's coming down is more than you can mentally deal with. Kind of like dealing with Noah's flood. You know, the world's going to be wiped out. And can you handle this? And we're dealing here with the Great Tribulation. And it could well be that most of you people out there, well, not maybe most, I don't know, many of you can't mentally comprehend or deal with this. It's too big. Anyway, that's the experience that I have here with my students. If you think that maybe you can handle it, this one costs you about $160 a year. I'd suggest that you call him and say, would you send me a sample copy and let me see if I can handle it. Maybe I cannot mentally deal with this. In which case, I'm not sure that you're a candidate for survival. It may well be that you can just put your head between your knees and kiss your hind end goodbye because you can't deal with reality. But let me give you a couple of 3 stories here out of U.S. Markets, page 3. Listen to this little ditty. Chapman begins by saying, the first line of defense for anyone in this world today is to protect themselves against central banks printing money and issuing credit to cover up their mistakes. As we have pointed out on numerous occasions, the confidence and trust in the financial system globally is as bad as it can be. And yes, it probably will get worse. As a result of this loss of faith, investors have turned to precious metals, gold and silver. It is a flight to quality at a surprisingly early stage of the meltdown. We expected this late in the hyperinflationary cycle, as in the early stages of deflation. This flight is on the way to absorbing tons and tons of gold and silver worldwide, and it is just getting underway. Obviously, investors are mindful of the unbelievable debt incurred by governments, banks, Wall Street, individuals, and others. In fact, there are those professionals who believe that a number of governments could go bankrupt. That is easy to believe with government and federal commitments now past $13 trillion. England and a number of European countries are in trouble as well. At least 5% of investors worldwide know that an inflationary time bomb is growing as governments continue to borrow and print money to stimulate their economies. It once was true that free markets were self-regulating, but that is no longer true because they are no longer free. They are now manipulated by the United States and British governments. Now, there's your first three paragraphs. Now, if you can grasp that, there's more to come. Now, the only reason that the dollar is hanging on at relatively high levels versus other currencies is that investors are still cashing in hedge funds, deleveraging, and the cash outs are done in U.S. dollars. The U.S. dollar exchange high on the dollar was 89.62. That occurred on March 4th, 2009. And it is currently about 84. Were it not for deleveraging and manipulation, the dollar would still be at 71. What else can we expect in fiscal 9/30/09, that's the fiscal year, when we will see a budget deficit of 12% of gross domestic product? M2, as measured by the St. Louis MZM, shows broad money supply at an annual rate of 17% in the last 6 months to March 16th. That means M3 is back up over 17%, and if you throw in $12.8 trillion the Treasury and the Fed are creating, it tells you that the dollar is doomed. I'm going to underline that. The dollar is doomed. That doesn't mean that if we keep doing this, the dollar is going to suffer. It means that it's already been done. Past tense. Now, when these inflationary numbers are created, it takes about 12 to 18 months for the effect to hit the marketplace. What you see government doing today isn't going to affect you in your job, in your home, or what you're doing for another year or a year and a half. But once it's done, it's done. Now, the $12.8 trillion that I told you about, and Bob just said here, now it's over $13 trillion, was $12.8. And then I saw the Fed the other day. They said that they're going to monetize $300 billion. Well, $12.8 plus 3 is $13.1. So now we're over $13 trillion, and it's growing at the rate of 17% a year. I mean, they're just out here printing money like there's just no tomorrow. Now, that's what they did down in Zimbabwe. It's what happened here in the United States in 1783. It's happened to Hungary, Germany. It's happened to all the banana republics in Latin America and South America. Then it's coming to America. Now, if you think you're going to avoid this one, well, then, you know, go put your head back in the sand and relax. Everything's going to be fine. Put on your smiley face. Now, there has to be a solution to this, and I always tell my students, you know, if you don't have a solution, if we can't figure out what we're going to do next, then you don't need to know what the problem is. If there's no solution to the problem, you sure as hell don't need to know what the problem is. The problem's hyperinflation. There's a solution. It's called gold and silver. It's called get the hell out of dollars while you can still get out of them. You got a house worth $400,000. You unload the house. The house is like the old maid. You want to unload the old maid on some other player in the game. Because all of the players in the game are not going to get out of this. Some of you players out there could get out, although it's late in the game to get out. So I always tell my students when they come in here on subsistence and survival, you probably are going to weather the storm right where you're at. The chances of you getting out of Los Angeles or Cleveland or San Francisco at this late stage in the process of the deflation and the hyperinflation that's on its way is probably not going to happen. You needed to do that in 2005. 2006, certainly no later than 2007. Some people probably escaped in 2008, and there might even be a few of you that can get out in 2009. I don't know. Maybe. But if you don't get out, all that means is that, well, okay, this is where you're at, and this is where you're going to weather the storm. I had a guy here the other day from Montana, and I asked him, I said, do you want to weather this storm in Montana, or would you rather weather the storm here in Missouri? And then he said, well, based upon what I see, I think I want to get out of Montana and move to Missouri. So he did. He did that last year. I haven't talked to him recently, but I'm sure that his move from Montana to Missouri was a positive move. I think he'll do better. He'll weather the storm easier here, where you have a 9-month growing season rather than a 4 or 5 month growing season. But here's the moral to the story. If you're stuck in Montana, then just start digging in, because that's probably where you're going to weather the storm. And how long is the storm going to be? 10 to 15 years. You're going to be right where you're at for the next 10 to 15 years, unless the second coming occurs or some other titanic event. Now, that was the dollar story. Now, let me give you another little part of the story here. The Fed has taken over the mortgage market with the help of the government's Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I don't know if you're aware of this, but if you're not, let's take a look at it. There are two big mortgage companies. They're called GSEs, Government-Sponsored Enterprises. I think that's what that means, GSE, Government-Sponsored Enterprise. And so these two entities owned about 50% of the mortgages in America, house mortgages. They had half of them. Well, the both of them went belly up. So the government came in and bought up 80% of them, I think it was. Which means now that you have the nationalization of the mortgage market in America. That's the bottom line, is what that means. There's a little bit of private money, 20%, but the rest of it's government money, it's taxpayer. So your federal government here in the United States is in the process of doing what Adolf Hitler did in the 1930s. They're consolidating power. They are simply taking over all of the activities and functions, not only of government, but of business as well. This is a corporate fascist bureaucracy, a welfare state, which is in the process of turning itself into a despotic dictatorship. That's where we're headed. We're going to go through a hyperinflation, which is going to create all kinds of unrest and civil discord. And then you'll have martial law. And then there's an ultimate end to this. We're in debt, and we're going into national captivity. Now, that's what's happened in the past. That's what I expect to happen here. Does that mean that the people of America are all going to die? No. Hell, they just went through this in Argentina in 2001. You know, and so this is 2009, and the people of Argentina are still living in Argentina. They have not been deported to China or Australia or someplace else. They're all still living there. Is there government and is there economics and are things different today than they were in 2000? Absolutely. Things are going to change here in the United States, but you people in New York, you're still going to be there in New York. Is it going to change for the better? Probably not. It's going to change for the worse, but that doesn't mean you're going to die. It could mean that, but it's typically not that dire, not yet. Now, there's another factor that comes in here, and it's called rationing. Rationing. When this hyperinflation comes along, people have all kinds of money, and then they don't have the goods to spend it on, so they'll spend their money on anything that's available. They got to get rid of the money right now because it's depreciating in value. One German guy bought a 20,000 mark. You know, a mark in 1900 was about a dollar or something like that. A 20,000 mark life insurance policy, a whole life insurance policy. Yeah, it was in 1903. In 1923, at the height of the hyperinflation, he cashed it in. And he bought one loaf of bread with it. 20,000 marks for one loaf of bread. And that's where the dollar is going. You people that have a life insurance policy, maybe you've got a Mutual or Northwestern Mutual life insurance policy, and maybe it's a paid-up whole life policy for $20,000. Okay? I had one of those one time. Here's what you're going to get for it, one loaf of bread. Now, if that's kind of scary, you got your 401k, and you got $300,000 in it, okay, that's probably going to pay you just about enough money to pay your rent for 1 month. $300,000 a month rent. Something on that order, so get ready for it. Now, the Fed has taken over the mortgage market with the help of the government's Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. This is the monstrosity that the Fed created with low interest rates and absolutely no oversight of what banks were doing, or so they say. We believe they directed the banks and the rating agencies to do what they did. So Chapman thinks that it was the government and their policy to create this collapse of the economy worldwide for the purposes of introducing world government. Now, we've been on this world government kick since the Tower of Babel. And now we're back at it again, and we're about to create this new one-world government. Now, the creator of the universe wouldn't tolerate it at the Tower of Babel. What makes you think he's going to tolerate it now? Huh? What makes you think that the God of creation, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who said no to the new world order at the Tower of Babel, is going to say, well, okay, I'll let you do it this time? This is where the Great Tribulation comes in, kids. They're buying back all of the toxic waste that they helped create, which will raise mortgage costs and in a couple of years destabilize housing again into a new bubble. And if that wasn't futile enough, they're buying and monetizing treasury notes and bonds. This is to accommodate a government that is determined to run budget deficits of more than 10% of GDP. As far out into the future as the eye can see. And incidentally, this is what the Weimar Republic did in the early 1920s, and you're all aware of how that ended. This is the modus operandi of a banana republic, something worthy of a Latin American dictator. The antics crowd, and they crowd out other borrowers, and creates inflation and destroys wealth. So your wealth is in the process of being destroyed. Now, if you're forewarned, you're forearmed. My daughter's house, worth $400,000 today, is going to be totally destroyed. Whatever equity she's got, she's going to lose. Does she know that? Well, I told her that. I don't know if she's paying attention or not. Children do not pay attention to their parents. And any of you parents out there know that. So I'm just telling all of you children out there that you didn't pay attention to your parents, and your children aren't going to pay attention to you. But then, you know, people have to reinvent the wheel. So my daughter will have to reinvent the wheel. I feel sorry for her, and that's the way life is. Now, my old Uncle Buster told me one time when I was a kid, he said, you want to learn every trade you can. And I did. I went out and learned every trade I could. He said, that'll serve you in good stead, because if you can't plumb, you can carpenter. If you can't carpenter, you can electrify. If you can't electrify, you can drive a truck. If you can't drive a truck, you can do something else. So get out there and learn how to do as much as you can while you can. All right, I'm about out of time here again, kids. I'm going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. We got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.